The Fed fears a financial panic as the economy is far more overleveraged and weaker than you think. All that and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. Because if you've wondered what keeps the Fed up at night, well, wonder no more. They just released an 85-page financial stability report that tells you exactly what they're afraid of, and that is a coming financial panic, which is just a nice way of saying a recession. And once you see what's in this report, and more importantly, the data that I'm going to show you behind it, well, it might just keep you up at night as well. Let's take a look at what the Fed is afraid of. And here you can see number one, elevated valuation pressures are signaled by asset prices that are high relative to economic fundamentals or historical norms and are often driven by an increased willingness of investors to take on risk. As such, elevated valuation pressures imply a greater possibility of outsized drops in asset prices. And here you can see the U.S. Composite Equity Valuation Index provided by Stouff Capital, and it is off the chart at 86. Now, it can go higher from 86%, but it's telling you equity valuations are really high, validating one of the Fed's fears. But it doesn't end there, because if you take a look at this S&P 500 versus max valuation index, the S&P 500 in blue and max valuation in this dotted line, what it tells you is the S&P 500 could still go higher. That's right. It could become even more overvalued. And experts suggest that that number is 5,117.14 on the S&P 500. And at that point, it would be at extreme levels. Not that it's already at high valuations, making the Fed's number one worry, well, very valid. And here you can see S&P 500 profit per share is way off the charts as consumer sentiment is crashing. And in the past, when that happened back going into the great financial crisis, as profit per share was up and consumer sentiment was down, well, that led to a sharp reversal of profit per share, giving you an indication just where this thing might go. Let's continue on, because excessive borrowing by any business and household leaves them vulnerable to distress if their incomes decline or if their assets they own fall in value. Now, one of the concerns here is we already know that due to the pandemic, unemployment assistance going away and all these other benefits, that incomes are likely to go down. We haven't seen that in the data just yet because the data is lagging. We'll see that soon enough, and that could be a trigger point for the economy. Let's keep going, because what do we see now is in event of such shocks, businesses and households with high debt burdens, there's a key, high debt burdens may need to cut back spending sharply. We've seen that in past recessions, affecting the overall level of economic activity. Moreover, when businesses and households cannot make payment on their loans, well, we already know what really happens. They go into delinquency and then into default, which leaves financial institutions and investors to cover the losses. And here you can see just how overleveraged some consumers are in debt. The red-hot housing market drives the biggest home equity drawdown since 2007, says this headline here. Homeowners are tapping into their property's equity to fund renovations, invest in stocks, as if that can't go wrong, and even more. And my friends, if you are using your equity to invest in risk assets such as stock market, be warned, that is a risky proposition. But let's keep going and see what consumers are doing here. In the U.S., homeowners withdrew $63 billion in equity from their properties through more than 1.1 million cash-out refinances in the second quarter of the year, the largest quarterly volume since mid-2007. Of course, we know exactly what came after mid-2007. According to data company Black Knight, just under 1 in 5 American homeowners say they have pulled money out of their properties in the last year, according to a survey in late October. Can you imagine 1 in 5, with another 18% saying they're considering it? That is incredible, and that is dangerous. And here you see the money pot is U.S. housing equity withdrawal has hit a post-financial crisis high as people cash out big to the tune of $63 billion. And we know, again, what happened following after mid-2007. Consumers were over-leveraged. Well, are they still over-leveraged now? Let's take a look, because it's not just home equity. Here we take revolving consumer credit owned and securitized plus non-revolving consumer credit owned and securitized. And what do we have? New all-time highs as consumers are loaded up in debt. And here we see real estate loans at all commercial banks, record all-time high. And yes, indeed, my friends, the consumer is overloaded and not in a position to sustain all this debt. And yet, what did we see just recently? Well, they're outspending. Let's take a look at that. And here you can see the retail sales data from this week, month over month in October, was up 1.7%, beating what analysts are expecting. I want you to understand, the consumers are overloaded in debt and they're on a spending binge, bringing the year-over-year rate of change up to 16.31%. If you strip out food and energy, that's where you see the term core, retail sales up month over month, 1.7%. So a huge move. And now if you take out gas and automobiles, it was only up a mere 1.4%. But consumers buying big. And here you can see in the chart, retail sales just going vertical as stores get wiped out. Because what are consumers afraid of? Shortages. The last time they were Googling big on shortages was right as the pandemic and shelves were emptying. And now they're afraid again. And so what are they doing? Well, they're draining the shelves now because they don't think they'll be filled later. We'll talk about how that's probably not too true here in a little bit. But let's continue on, because it's not just a story that retail sales are up. The question you should be asking, that I ask, are retail sales up due to prices, demand, or both? That's the real question. And anytime you have the term real in your question, well, that's an inflation-adjusted answer. And to get that, well, we need to turn to this chart here from EPB Macro Research, who says the inflation-adjusted retail sales, well, that number was right on trend of where it's been. In fact, according to him, and validated by other experts, it was sitting around 6.6 to 6.7%. And what does that tell you? That indeed, there are a lot of inflationary effects in that data, and consumers are spending more by dollar amount, but they're not buying as much stuff for their dollar. Let's keep going, because real disposable personal income is down, and that puts at risk consumers' ability to make payments on their loans when they have less income. And here you can see that it, on a year-over-year basis, is headed lower. It's not the worst it's been, but boy, we saw the last time it went negative, we were deep into the great financial crisis. It didn't even go negative toward the end. Then it went negative going into almost a meltdown in 2015. And here it is, negative and rolling over, putting consumers' positions in stress. As you just saw, they're loaded up in debt, validating for the second time now in this report that the Fed has every reason to worry. And if you're worried about how all this will hit your portfolio, be sure to check out the link up there for Portfolio Shield, a strategy that I invented that does a great job of hedging risk when markets go down. But let's keep going with what the Fed's story is, because excessive leverage within the financial sector increases the risk that financial institutions will not have the ability to absorb even modest losses when hit by adverse shocks. In those situations, institutions will be forced to cut back lending, sell their assets, or in extreme cases, shut down. Such responses can substantially impair credit access for households and businesses. But is there leverage in the financial sector? Oh, you bet. And that number is off the charts. Here you can see just in the ETF sector, looking at leveraged ETF. Now, if you don't know what a leveraged ETF is, if you've ever bought the S&P 500, a levered version of it might be 2x or 3x, meaning you go up double or triple what the S&P 500 does. Of course, as you can guess, what goes up double or triple? That's right, they can go down double and triple as well. And look at this, as you can see, the S&P 500, of course, sitting near all-time highs today. And what do we have? The ratio of levered long to short is off the charts. So people are highly levered long the stock market, putting financial institutions and their retirements at risk. And they're doing it with a smile on their face. How about this from leverage on the other direction? We have a report from Nomura showing their CTA positioning, which our Commodity Trading Association is what it stands for. And they are formula-based momentum strategies. And right now, they are short the U.S. 10-year bond note at 100%. They're at max leverage short. Boy, and that is dangerous, because if you saw the video the other day, well, you know where the bond market is going and where interest rates are going, meaning these machines are now on the wrong side of the trade. And that oftentimes is an opportunity. And so once again, not just one thing the Fed is worried about is right, or two, now you have three. But does it get worse? Oh yes, check this out. Funding risks expose a financial system to the possibility that investors will run by withdrawing their funds from a particular institution or sector. Now today, people are just cramming money in. Wait till they sell. The many financial institutions raise funds from the public with a commitment to return their investors' money on short notice, but those institutions then invest much of their funds in illiquid assets that are hard to sell quickly or in assets that have a long maturity. This liquidity and maturity transformation can create an incentive for investors to withdraw funds quickly in adverse situations. Facing a run, financial institutions may need to sell assets quickly at fire sale prices, thereby incurring substantial losses and potentially even becoming insolvent. Now, you might remember the last time that happened, we called it the Great Financial Crisis. What will we call it again? Who knows? But according to the Fed, historians and economists often refer to widespread investor runs as financial panics, and that is what the Fed's worried about. Do they have reason to? Absolutely, because this fund manager survey from Bank of America shows that investors are still long inflation assets and short taper assets. They're mega long commodities, banks, U.S. equities, REITs, broad equities, materials, discretionary. What are they short? Utilities, emerging markets, and bonds. They're short. They're safety net. And that's dangerous when you're uninsured. You don't want to be out there, but people are running around without any form of portfolio insurance. If you can only imagine, but yet, and despite the rotation out, month-on-month change in positioning, they've gone even deeper. They continue as of November. They're here deep in the U.S. equities, putting more money in November in discretionary and other asset class. They actually moves, looks like they moved some money in bonds, but they certainly didn't move the envelope much because their positioning is mega, mega short. How about this? Long tech remains the most crowded trade. I don't know what you think. Maybe we'll put something up in the community tab today, but long U.S. tech is the crowdest trade, followed by Bitcoin. Of course, when you look at short U.S. treasuries, yeah, people are short and even shorter as of November as people cram in and are all in on their bets, making the Fed's likeliness of their financial panic coming true. Because here, we saw how much leverage there are. Well, wait till you see this chart, which is the FINRA margin debt. It's now another 3.6% month over month to a record $935.9 billion as people borrow money like crazy, putting financial institutions at risk should there be a meltdown, which would trigger all kinds of margin calls and forced selling. But investors taking massive, massive bets on with their portfolio, putting them in a dangerous situation. Because what happens when buyers go away? Well, most investors don't even know who the biggest buyer is. That's corporations. Check this out. Corporate America, the market's big stock buyer, has $1 trillion to spend. The buybacks have surged as businesses' cash stockpiles hit an all-time high amid a boom in profits. The scale of these purchases from corporations who are less sensitive to the price of their stock because they don't care what price they pay is seen by some as a key support for the market, despite a chorus of warnings on everything from stretched valuations to a more hawkish shift by the Federal Reserve on monetary policy. Keep that in mind, that these corporations are holding the market up. And if for any reason retail sales start to go down, consumers' pockets get tight, they're going to stop spending. And boy, that would again validate the Fed's fears. Keep going on here. You see big buyer returns and now share buybacks are poised to surpass 2018's record as corporations go back and dump their cash, not into jobs, not into expanding their business, and buying their stock so they can line their executive pockets. And here you can see corporations will be the largest source of U.S. equity demand in 2022. And I want you to be thinking, what if they're not the largest source of demand? What happens then? Anyways, let's keep going. As they've been for most of the past decade, according to Goldman Sachs, they even said a proposed tax on buybacks would do little to slow it. We expect the proposed 1% net buyback tax, if implemented, would have only a marginal impact on corporate equity demand. And to be sure, the planned repurchases are usually intended for multiple years, and not all of them will get executed. So keep that in mind. If you're getting excited about this chart because you're long in the equity market, it is not your insurance plan. And for technology firms, they are often meant to offset the increase in shares that come from granting options to employees. Still, the splurge offers some comfort for bulls. During some past market routes, companies rushed up to snap up their own shares to prevent losses from snowballing, type of sport that could buffer another downturn. The buybacks are also mitigating the impact of share offerings, which are exploding as companies take advantage of elevated valuations to raise money. And some people ask me how I can be bullish on the broad U.S. equity market after a major correction that I believe is coming. That is exactly why, because I believe corporations will take that opportunity to buy a ton of their shares back and drive equity valuations even higher. Let's keep going, because here you can see the question now becomes, can the economy actually support this? Well, the answer is no, and that's the problem, because it makes the Fed look like they're about to be right. So let's look at the data from today. We see industrial production up 1.6%, beating analyst expectations of a 0.7 increase, bringing the year-over-year rate of change up to 5.14%. But is that the ticket? Even capacity utilization rose from 75.2 to 76.4, which is a percentage of factories that are being utilized. Is that enough to make this all work? Well, here's industrial production, a chart of it, and we're just getting back to where it was at the beginning of the pandemic, and it was slowing down. It's not back to its 2018-19 peaks. It's not back to its 2015 peak. It's way under that. And on this chart, which obviously you can see the error, I overlaid trade balance, but don't worry, I've got another chart. This is the balance of payments or the trade deficit, but check this out. I inverted the trade deficit numbers, and look at that. So what you see is, as industrial production is growing, you see that we are importing more and more goods. And so what does that tell you? Because that chart is really cool. It tells you when we're running massive deficits, it's doing it because the economy is expanding. So when those deficits start to back off, guess where what's gonna happen to industrial production in the US? It's likely to go down, because again, I'll put it back up. You can see, and you can go to the Fred database yourself and see how interlinked those two are overall. Now, they're not perfect, but it gives you an indication of what's going on. As long as imports are coming, that means there's consumer demand. But will consumer demand hold? Well, we'll look at that in a second, because capacity utilization needs to be at 80% or higher to hold inflation. Well, it's sitting at 76% and looking like it's flatlining out as consumer prices head higher. What it tells us, this is not an issue with factories. Might be some of it, but a lot of it is supply chain issues. But for consumers, we go here to advanced retail sales, and what you can see, I've overlaid the consumer price index both on a year-over-year basis, and what are we seeing right now? Inflation's up, and spending is up too on a year-over-year rate of change. It's huge, but you know what? That often happens late into and as you go into a recession when inflation rises, because what are consumers afraid of? Higher future prices. In this case, with the holidays coming up, consumers are afraid they won't be able to get what they want. So they're draining the shelves now to ensure that they won't have what they want. And that, how does that all play out? Well, in the past, it usually leads to a big drop in retail sales and also a big drop in inflation. So now you can see the Fed has every reason to be afraid in its financial stability report. So you know what's keeping them up at night. And now that you see the data behind it, well, maybe it'll keep you up at night as well. But with that, I'll tell you what won't keep you up at night, and that is the disclosure. Anyways, thanks for watching. I'll see you back on Friday. I'm Steve Van Meter. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investor or other advice. Serials not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation by a security, financial instrument, or participate in a particular trading strategy. This video was paired by Steve Van Meter on personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that I have on my own do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.